Welcome to Infinite Consciousness this week. This is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening. I have a great show for you tonight, and some new information. That's going to surprise a lot of people, I think. But I have Klaus Heinemann. We're going to talk about his new book, The Orb Project. How are you, Klaus?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you, Eva.
Thanks for coming on. So tell my listeners a little bit about you and your website, where they know where to find you. Just give us a little bit of background about you before we get started.
Okay, very good. Well, my name is Klaus Heinemann, and I was raised and educated in Germany, as you might hear. And I came to this country quite a while ago. I was trained as a physicist. I have a PhD in physics from the German University of Tübingen. And I am I was hired by NASA to work for them in the space industry, particularly in the field of material science and engineering. I also joined the faculty of Stanford University, and for several years I was a research professor there in surface physics. And I then founded my own company, which does contract research for NASA.
And so you worked with Bill Tiller, too, don't you? I think a lot of my listeners are big fans of Bill's.
Right. I've worked with Bill Tiller together in the same department for 4 years. And at the time, which was really interesting, it was in the early 80s, neither of us knew of the other person's real interests. So we cooperated very well in surface physics. And it wasn't until maybe 10 to 15 years later that our paths crossed again, and Bill Tiller had done his marvelous research in psychoenergetics, and we were about to publish this book. And so the publisher actually suggested, why not ask Bill Tiller to write a foreword? And he agreed, and we met, and it's been very delightful ever since.
He's just a wonderful guy. I just adore him.
Yes, he is wonderful. So he's also, I might add, one of the people whom I regard highest in terms of his knowledge in theoretical physics.
Really?
Yes. He is really at the very top.
I think so, too, but, you know, when you admire someone so much, you put him on the top of the list. It really doesn't matter why, but I think he's just such a brilliant man, and he's awake.
Yes.
He's consciously awake. And
oh, yes.
It's just wonderful what he's done. So tell us a little bit about how you got started working on orbs, of all things.
Yes. I and my wife and myself, we had been on a path of pursuing the connection between science and spirituality for a long time. And we were both invited to take photographs at a spiritual intensive that was held by a renowned spiritual healer back in Chicago. And that was about 3 years ago. In fact, we'd been photographing before, but at this particular intensive, I took a lot of pictures, all from the same point where I was standing and photographing the healer doing healings to many people. And that evening, when I downloaded the pictures into my computer, we noticed that all of a sudden there was something in front of a person standing right next to the healer that was very, very unusual. And it was like a bright light bulb. And we both were flabbergasted, my wife and I.
Because it wasn't something that was there in real life that you could see in physical.
Oh, it was clearly something that was not, that wasn't there. So we actually went down to the ballroom and convinced ourselves whether there was anything that would make any sense out of this, because none of the other pictures showed it. Just in this one, it was very bright. And then there was actually another picture where something similar appeared, but in a different place in a very prominent different place. So we looked at that, we looked at these pictures, we did some electronic enhancements to bring out whatever is there, which you can do very legitimately, and we knew right away that that we were onto something.
So what do you think it was?
I think that this is a phenomenon that is not just a reflection of the flash of the camera on airborne particles, as is definitely the case in some of these. But this is something real, something that is generated by an effect that at this point I still cannot fully explain. But I do believe, and this is my working hypothesis, that genuine orbs, and there are many of those around, are emanations from the spirit world, from spirit beings, from individual spirit beings.
Now, tell us a little bit about, I know you've taken thousands of these since I read your book, The Orb Project, and you said you had taken 100,000 pictures, or you went through 100,000 pictures.
Well, actually, I myself did not take quite that many, but our co-author, Michal Ledwitz, he took, I think by now he has taken about 150,000. So, I mean, it's a huge, huge number that if you put his and mine together, it is an astonishing number.
What? Tell us what it is with the camera. I mean, not just any camera will do this. So how do you know that it's not flash, number one? And secondly, what is it that you do? Are there special settings, or can anyone do this?
The beauty of this is that actually anyone can do this. And to our great astonishment, what we found out is that it is not really our doing, but it is their doing to show up. And that is the uniqueness of this whole experience, that it is these spirit beings that have found a way to make themselves visible in people's cameras. And it's your camera and my camera and anybody else's camera. There's nothing special about it whatsoever. It doesn't have to be expensive. It can be an expensive one. It can be a cheap one. They show up equally.
Do you have to get in an altered state of mind, meditate or something, to get them to appear? Because I've been kind of a little bit obsessed with this since I read your book, and I've got my camera and I've been snapping all over the place. And I did get two or three, but it wasn't a lot, and I know that you'd gotten to the point where you can get them pretty much all the time. What is it that you do that makes that happen?
Well, this sounds kind of odd, but you can really just simply invite them. You don't have to speak that. You just the communication is not with words or with speech. The communication is with the mind, and they will show up when you invite them, and when they want to show up. It's not really up to you or up to me. It's just they want to be seen, and I believe that there's a message behind all of that. So I would say that nobody should be discouraged if you don't see a lot of them right away. I mean, they don't show up in every picture that I take. That would be a misinterpretation. There are pictures when we see many of them, and there are many pictures where we see none.
Do you have to? Do they come in the first picture, or do you? Because I know you talked about clicking several in a row as fast as you can get your camera to do it. What did you do? How do they usually appear? Do they come right away, or do you get them after several snaps?
Well, it depends on the situation. In some cases, it is true that you're better off if you just are very generous in taking pictures, lots of them, and then eventually they will show up. And this is probably the case with many of them may be somewhat lower. I don't know how to really distinguish that, but many of them do show up in the night sky, in the dark night sky, after you have when you're taking many pictures at the same time. And we've done this often, and we found that maybe there are more of them in the second, third, and fourth, and tenth, and so on picture than in other ones, and then in the first one.
Now, you talked in your book about you got that some of them would appear in the shape of the lens of the camera, into that hexagon shape, I think is what you said. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes.
That's really interesting.
Yes, it is. This is actually, I do have to make a distinction here before I answer that. The way this book came about, this book is co-authored by Michal Ledwith and by myself, and we both had manuscripts on our experience with orbs. And we happened to present these manuscripts to the owner of the publishing company Beyond Words, and she then approached us, both Michal and myself, whether we wouldn't do a combined book, because the experiences that we had were complementary rather than overlapping. And it turned out that Michal mostly photographed in the absence of many people around, in night sky, under night sky conditions. That was mostly what he did. Now, he did many, many photos. I mean, if you look at 100,000 photos, there are many of those that were also taken in situations with people, but mostly he did this in nature, in the night sky and in nature. Whereas we took pictures that were taken in the setting of spiritual teachings, of spiritual events of various kinds, with many people in the audience, and also in settings where there were children around, family settings, and so on. So mostly under quite different situations. So let's see. How did I get to that? The lens.
The lens.
The lens,
right.
Shape. So having said all of this, Michal has a presentation or a rationalization that has to do with the lens, with the shape of the lens of the camera. I personally.
And you're talking about the shutter on the inside,
right,
of the outside.
Right.
Lens.
Okay. Right. I personally am not so sure if I follow this particular interpretation in all detail. So when we agreed to write this book cooperatively, we agreed that we would each present our own chapter in the book with our own finding, without necessarily in all detail agreeing what the other person would write and present. And so you've touched on one of these relatively little, I would say, maybe relatively unimportant details where I have a slightly different theory than Michal does.
Okay.
Good enough?
Mm-hmm. So was it you in the book that was talking about being able to communicate with them, or was it
Yes.
him?
Oh, yes.
Because that really fascinates
me. Actually, that was both of us. Both of us clearly have the feeling that we were able to communicate with these beings.
Tell us about that. I know everybody'd love to know.
There were... Well, I'll give you one example. And this is a personal one that my wife and I both had. We were visiting seminar grounds where she and I had participated in many, many seminars, many many seminars that had to do with the furthering of consciousness. And the teachers, both teachers who were instrumental in facilitating these seminars, had passed on. Excuse me. And the seminar grounds had been sold. And we came back. We were invited kind of as a last time farewell, to a last time farewell situation, to kind of walk through these grounds, which was beautiful, situated in nature. And there were these little cabins where we had, the seminarians had been housed in. And there was one that we had stayed in for a number of times. And I said to myself, I'd like to take a picture. And I'd like to have in this picture orbs that are representative of our two spiritual leaders. And this particular picture was the only one where there were two beautiful orbs, clearly visible, giving me the answer, giving us the answer.
Weren't they right in front of the cabin?
They were right in front of the cabin, correct.
That's amazing.
My wife was standing right next to the cabin, and so that was the picture, and that picture is presented in the book.
Was it you or Dr. Ledwith that asked proposed questions, and they would form in a particular shape for yes and another shape for no?
That was Dr. Ledwith.
Oh, okay.
That was
okay.
Dr. Ledwith. He asked them to appear in a certain shape. That was not necessarily related to the shutter formation.
Oh, okay.
But the answer clearly is the same.
Can you tell us, I'll ask him about that when I come home, but since I brought it up, can you just tell him about that?
Oh, I think it would be more appropriate if you have him talk about that experience.
Now, another thing that you talked about, I think it was you in your book, was the taking the pictures of the orbs and how they emitted light, and then how some other kind of spirits would take in the light.
Yes.
The more lower, assume that it's a lower frequency. Can you tell us about that?
Right. This is a big topic in itself. But the overall conclusion that that we are coming up with in the book is that these orbs, when they are highly evolved spirits or coming from highly evolved spirits, are functioning entirely differently when they are imaged in your cameras, or in our cameras, in people's cameras, from orbs that are, called to be of lower spirits. So we'll talk about the latter part a little later. So these highly evolved spirits apparently function on the basis of emitting light. They are not reflecting light. They are not absorbing light. They are emitting it. And they are emitting it in the form of highly coherent light, that in the form of light that is almost like a laser beam, very directed into one direction only. And it appears to me that the initial energy is coming from the flash of your camera. And then these orbs are able to reflect this back by choosing the direct direction of your camera and not affecting, for example, a camera that's literally mounted right next to it, just a few inches apart. So they have the capability, like a laser beam, to direct their light into your camera.
So, in other words, whatever it is conscious and aware.
Whatever it is conscious, because that can only be done in a conscious situation. Otherwise, just the chance that you would get such a directed beam into your camera from some being that is several feet or several tens of feet away from you are nil, for all practical purposes, are nil.
What do you account for their ability to change colors? What does that mean, having different colors?
Different colors is, a color is a a vibration at a certain frequency that happens to be visible to your eyes. And that's all that it is. And so there may be different beings in that world that is outside of ours that can vibrate at different frequencies. They don't have to all vibrate at the same frequencies. And so as Ledwith and we all found out is that the chance that they vibrate in a frequency that is a little lower than the normal frequency with which we see things is higher than the normal white frequency. So in other words, quite a few of these orbs vibrate in a in the infrared range rather than in the normal visible light spectrum. But many others do vibrate in a differently, and so this is only a kind of a summation of in a way of our findings. And so I believe that there are many different ways of these orbs to make themselves known, and there are many different species of orbs, and some of those vibrate in the ultra in the infrared range, while others vibrate with an entire visible spectrum of light.
What do you mean when you say species?
Well,
when you say species, I think about categorizing, you know, life.
I think that this whole phenomenon is just really eye-opening. And if you begin to think about it, I think you have to see that in that realm there may be as many or many more species of beings than in our own realm.
Interesting.
And so that's when I talk about, you know, they can all look different. There are so many species that I think there are in that realm that we are just literally scratching the surface.
I have two questions. I'm going to say them both because I don't want to forget. So help me remember them. The first one's going to be about, you know, we all have said, many of the scientists and many of the mystics have said that, you know, there's a whole other parallel realities right where we are right now, but they're vibrating at different rates. I want to talk about that. But then I also want to ask, what you brought up that word frequency. And in a lot of my interviews, I'll ask somebody, we'll be talking about consciousness, and we'll be talking about raising your frequencies to be able to hear or get information from
yes,
what Lynn McTaggart calls the field or whatever.
Yes.
And inevitably, a scientist will give me a hard time about using that word frequency. Well, I don't see any difference talking about a human being's raising their frequency than what you're talking about with the orbs. So why is there that difference there? Why is there that confusion about that word frequency?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that. I also would give you difficulties, especially if you were not talking so much about frequencies as talking about raising vibrations. I think this is a terminology that is used from physics and is in a way abused in this,
Okay,
this
wait,
kind
can
of
you speak up just a little bit?
Okay. What I'm saying is that this terminology of raising vibrations may be something that sounds very nice, but it's not really quite in line with normal physical understanding of vibrations or of frequencies. I think that what we're talking about here is a realm that is substantially different from our own realm. And two things that make it very distinctly different are that there is no time, or a totally different understanding of time, for all practical purposes, no time, and there is no space. Space does not exist. Distances do not exist. What's here is there. This realm is entirely different. And when we're talking about raising frequencies or raising vibrations. What we mean is attuning ourselves to perceiving information that is resident in that realm. That's what we're really talking about.
That and makes a lot of sense. That's a good response that I can understand.
Yeah, and I think when we, you know, scientists now know nowadays, when you use the word understand, they know now that our understanding is not something that is confined to the physical space of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense. It is not. What we understand, what really is the product of our brains, is way outside of our brains. It is lodged in something that we call the field. And this field is this other domain. So we are actually functioning on a day-to-day basis in this other reality, in this other field.
What a beautiful way to put it.
Yes.
Because people don't get that.
Yeah, I know that they don't. And this is, it takes a leap to really understand this and to really, and it takes actually courage to start to give this thought some meaning. You know, it's enormous. Just think that what you are thinking with your, what you are really thinking with your mind goes out into a field and becomes available to everybody anywhere in the universe to pick up.
I'm curious, how do you think, I don't know what it's called, so I'm going to call the field Big Mind, just for understanding purposes.
Uh-huh.
How do you think Big Mind conveys its messages to us? Do you think it's through signaling, kind of like the Morse code, you know, dots and dashes and voltage attached to it maybe, and then brain picks it up and interprets that signaling?
I think that it's probably much less picturist than that. I think it is just simply a being in tune with that field. How can we pick it up? How do you pick up?
What is it? It's got to have some kind of communication mechanism for us to pick it up, or else it would just be white noise.
Right. Well, that's the innate capability that we have that makes us a member not just of the physical but also of the non-physical reality. It is what's in us that reminds us that we are not just physical beings, but that we are really spiritual beings with a physical, temporary physical experience. And this picking up is something that is not confined to just a few people. I think that it is just something that is entirely underdeveloped in people. And that, in fact, people in former millennia were much more, much closer to than we are now.
I think probably so too. They didn't have all of the other activities to occupy little mind.
Correct.
They had more time and silence in their lives, probably.
Correct. They were not brainwashed.
Right.
That the only thing that matters is what you can touch and see and hear and feel with your senses.
Now let's talk about the other question that I had about parallel universes. I guess that's what you call it. I'm not really sure. But, you know, I don't think that those orbs just pop in and out. I think that they're probably there all of the time, and we just can't, and there's a lot of stuff there all of the time that we can't see.
Yes.
But that what vibrates at a different rate beyond the capability of our eyes, or what?
Right. What's happening in my mind, and at least this is my working hypothesis with this, is that these orbs are, you know, you and I, when our what's called physically called the rest state or the resting state is that, you know, our resting state is to be in a low degree of motion, and we are quiet there and so on. This is just the opposite in that in this world, in this reality where these orbs exist. They normally exist at, for our purposes, immensely high speeds of velocity, and they are resting in, so they're never still. They're always moving around at superluminous speeds, and they're also expanding and contracting constantly. And so the reason why we do not see this all the time, why we do not get them into our photographs all the time, and why we don't see them with our own eyes, the reason for that is because they're moving so fast. And when we are using a flash and offer them the energy to make themselves visible in our cameras, then for some small amount of time, just barely short enough for the duration of the flash, they do hold still, then, because they know that they want to be seen, and they beam back the energy that they get back into your camera, and then they can be seen. So their normal rest state is one of great mobility and of great expansion and contraction all the time. That's my working hypothesis.
You also, your book, and I can't remember if this was you or Dr. Ledwith, but you talked about what we presume to be negative spirits.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
That's actually in my section. And there is the only reason why I showed that is because there are spirits that we perceive as negative. And these, you hear about them in ghost hunter situations and so on. It's something that is probably getting much more notoriety than these light spirits or these benevolent spirits. Now, first, I would say that probably all spirits are benevolent. There's only one direction in which spirits can evolve, and that is in the direction of the good. But then there are some that are so low involved that they really don't know quite what they're doing, and that they try to maybe generate some mischief. So let's assume that is the case. So I presented a picture or a picture page where a group of people whom I know very well and who are very have a very high standard of integrity were hired to get rid of some beings that were haunting a public building in Southern California. And the principal of this person asked me to examine some of the pictures that they had taken. And these pictures showed very clearly dark spots in an absolutely perfect, otherwise absolutely perfect sky, a blue sky. And upon closer examination of these pictures, it became very clear that these dark spirits are, in fact, literally dark spirits, meaning that they are not emitting any light, but that they are only absorbing light. And if you follow this thought all the way through, then you find several very distinctly different aspects for these types of spirits. And the most important one is that they cannot remove themselves from the scene. If they are there, they will be seen because they are absorbing. They cannot say, I don't want to be seen. They are just there, and they will then be seen in your camera. Now, if that is the case, and I really have no doubt to believe that this is the way they function, because they are not able to make themselves known in the way, in the same fashion as these much more evolved beings. So If that is the case, then we see these dark spirits in our cameras whenever they are there. And since we see very few of those, and I doubt if our viewers have seen any of those, that means just simply that there are indeed very few of those around.
That's interesting.
And that's the only inference that I want to make here. So we are talking about huge differences in terms of spirit beings that are all around us. And the overwhelming majority, as far as I can tell, is that these are highly benevolent beings from this spiritual world that are around us, literally like a cloud of witnesses, and that are just simply trying to make themselves known.
Now, I have to ask this, or at least raise this right here. You're a man that has produced a lot of scientific work of great integrity, and you're very respected in the world for that work. Why is it that conventional science doesn't want to believe work from somebody like you and Bill Tiller and Robert John when the evidence is overwhelming?
Well, why is that? This
I mean,
is a good
you
question.
Risk your reputation to do
yes.
this, you know.
Yes.
Why won't they listen?
Why won't they listen? First, I want to say that many do listen. And I feel very encouraged by the masses of people who do listen and who do find that what we're communicating is in fact very much along the lines of what they are seeing and what they are experiencing. Now, during the last, I don't know, what, 200, 300, 400 centuries, science has literally turned around in our Western civilization. And it has become, it has come to the point where we are being educated to only believe what is in essence reproducible, totally reproducible. Now, something that is reproducible means that if I make an experiment, if I take a pebble in my hand and drop it down on the floor, that act is reproducible. If I take another one and let go, it'll drop just as well on the floor. Now, there is a mounting degree of evidence that there, when it gets to energies that are much more refined, and we call these energies subtle energies, then that is no longer, reproducibility is no longer something that that you can count on. And any experiments that are not entirely reproducible are, by definition of science, nowadays still, unfortunately, rejected. Now, many of these experiments that Tiller have done, and that have to do with orbs, and just let's stay with those two, are of the nature where the person either doing the experiment or seeing them is actually involved. And the outcome depends on the mind of the person doing the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
We can no longer, in the field of subtle energies, divorce the mind from the outcome. It does no longer work. Because, as I said earlier, what the mind is doing, it is sending out into this field constantly notions. And if I'm sending out a notion that has to do with a particular experiment that is of a subtle energy nature, then I am affecting that.
Right.
And let me describe one of the key experiments that Bill Tiller has done. And he, of course, could explain it much better, but let me do it anyway. Just picture a condenser plate with just a couple of copper plates, maybe a square foot in size, that are separated by maybe, a small gap, maybe half an inch or something like that. And just now picture that these copper plates are encapsulated in such a way that the space in between the two plates is very well controlled. And then you put a voltage onto these two plates. And at some point in time, you get a breakdown. If the voltage is high enough, you get an arc going from one plate to the other. And if you actually surface these copper plates with something that is called a dielectric, then you don't get just one huge arc, but you get lots of micro-discharges when you bring the voltage higher up. So all you would do is you would then have a little microammeter between the two plates in that circuit and crank the voltage up, and at some point in time, you get a reading on the microammeter. And now, picture that you would, and this is what Bill has done, that you would crank up the voltage just below where these micro breakdowns occur. Now, he has done literally hundreds of experiments of that. Well, I don't know how many, but a lot, where he had people come in with their hands, not touching these plates, but maybe have these plates between their hands, and the hands were maybe, 10 inches, 20 inches apart. And as soon as that would be the case, the micro-discharges would start. There was no touching involved. And that just simply having the hands there started the physical process of micro-discharges. Now, he refined these experiments, and he did all kinds of interesting addenda to that. For example...
Wait, let me ask you a question here.
Yes.
Was that just a random person, or was it one of the people that he gets to get
it
in an altercation?
It was totally a random person.
Okay.
The only thing that he started doing is he said, well, just simply focus your mind on what's going on between your hands. Okay, and then he also would say, now take your mind off and think of 2 plus 2 is 5, which is, of course, not right. And the moment they did that, they focused on something else, the discharges would go away.
Interesting.
And
I wasn't aware of that.
It is a clear indication that, and because he has done this with so many different subjects, that it's without any doubt an indication that we with our mind can influence physical reality. Now, I have also shown a picture in the book, and by the way, the name of the book, of course, is The Orb Project, and it's available by Atria Books. It is an Atria book by Simon & Schuster, and it's available everywhere in bookstores. I have shown an example where a highly intuitive Native American person said, I can concentrate my thought to a space outside of my head. And to prove that, I'm going to do this, and then I'll tell you when I've done it, and then you take a photo. And so this was done, and that photo that came out of that is presented in the book. And it is a ball of light that's next to his head. And again, such a thing, it's irrefutable evidence that one can focus with the mind an energy. And if you can focus that energy outside of your head, directly outside of your head, you can focus it anywhere else in space. You're not limited to a certain vicinity. It can be outside your house. It can be your child anywhere in a different location, or anywhere in the world, or anywhere in the universe.
What does this mean to humankind?
What
does it? What is it? What is the message that they should be hearing when they get this, that they can do what?
It appears to me that the message of all of that is that we should recognize that there is more to us than just our normal physical life, our normal understanding of what life is all about. And just simply becoming aware will raise our awareness as a species.
Do you think that we create our own reality with mind?
I think this is a big question. I would say basically yes, but it would require a lot of detail in the response. Yes, you and I, we do create our reality. That's what it really does boil down to. But we're also in a situation, and you and I are in different situations, and people are in different situations, and much of that reality and much of these situations is not created by ourselves. We're set into it. But I think what we are creating ourselves is what we are learning from these situations that we are placed into. That is consciousness.
We've got about 10 minutes left, and if you don't mind, excuse me, I'd like to, you know, I told you earlier about this consciousness project that I'm working on. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about that.
All right.
Maybe try to give me, I've got several, so maybe try to give me some brief answers so we can get as many as we can, if you can do that. The first thing I would like to know is, what is consciousness to you?
Consciousness is, to me, knowing in context. It comes from the Latin, and there it is con, like together, sira, which is wissen, which is to know, wissen in German. So, to know in context, that is what consciousness is all about. Now, what is the context? The context is the largest that we can comprehend. And so, in order to be conscious, truly conscious, we are going outside of the boundaries of our physical beingness.
Would consciousness to you be God, or whatever someone wants to call it, source, or all there is? Or?
Consciousness to me is the ultimate.
Okay.
It is the ultimate, yes.
Okay, and go ahead.
And let me just state that if you really think about this, then with becoming conscious, you and I and the rest of us becoming a little more conscious means that ultimately we are evolving that ultimate consciousness that there is and that created us even more. So we are in fact participants in a process that is evolutionary.
I agree with you. What is mind?
Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mind is a computer. It's needed to create consciousness, but it's not consciousness.
Okay. What do you think that the brain thinks, or do you think that the brain interprets mind or consciousness? What do you think about? What does the brain do?
The brain takes it all. The brain is a participant. Now, I'm going way out of line in my
We understand it's your opinion.
It's my opinion, and it's not my field. But in terms of the overall importance, the overall substance of this, is that our mind is a gift given to us in our beingness to create consciousness. Because consciousness is related to two decisions that we have to make in our lives, And typically these decisions are very simple and very small, and they all have to do with good or not so good. And if we make the, every so often, if we make these decisions for the good, we are in fact ever so little raising consciousness. And the moment we do that, this consciousness goes out into the field, and it's no longer ours, and it is usable and can be tapped into by everybody. That's how I see that.
Okay. Let's talk a minute about, do you think that there is any mass on the quantum level down to the irreducible unit?
Any mass with the TH?
Mass. Do you, in other words, you know, do things stop at the smallest amount of mass, or does there get to be a point where there's no mass? I'm really wanting to know here is,
I think that the physical universe, the physical world, or the physical reality, is exactly as we understand it in normal conventional physics, and so there are these very small building blocks and all of that, but the physics doesn't stop there, and it continues endlessly in the direction which goes beyond a description of mass and electromagnetism and all of this into a realm that does not have mass and that is not bound by any sort of velocity barrier, like the speed of light.
Thank you. I love your answer. We've got about 3 minutes left, so I'm going to give you the opportunity if you could say anything that could or would make a difference in the world. What would that be?
Well, let's 3 minutes is not a long time, but let's just what comes to mind is the example of the British astronomer, respected person, Sir Fred Hoyle. And in the 1950s, he predicted that once mankind would see an image of the Earth that is taken from outer space, we would be literally in a position of changing, raising the level of consciousness of the planet at large. And that raise of consciousness has actually happened. And there is great agreement that this really has been a delightful raise in consciousness, seeing that we're all one, that there are no boundaries.
That's right.
This is an illusion to say, I'm here and you're there, and you have this territory and I have this territory, and you don't intrude on mine, or you know, all of this is total nonsense. We this planet Earth is all we got, and so that's the lesson from that. And I think that this possibility that we have, whereby these I would say beings, or these conscious, highly conscious beings from the reality that we call the spiritual reality, show up in our pictures, in your picture, in my picture, and camera, and all over the world, to all kinds of people. But this may very well be a new level where we can say, yes, now we are really to pay attention to the fact that we are not alone, that there is more to life than the life that we have been accustomed to. And we better pay attention.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Yes, it's exciting.
Before we go, just tell them quickly where to find you again, your website or
okay.
your contact information.
Okay, you can find me at www.healingguidance.net, healingguidance.net/Klaus, that's my first name, KLAUS.HTM.
And your book is The Orb Project, and it's well worth reading. Thank you so much for coming on, Klaus, and actually I'd love to have you come back again if you wouldn't mind.
Right. I certainly would like to do that, yes.
Agape,
and thank you,
and
Eva.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to all the listeners and to you.
Good night, dear.
Bye-bye.